Okay, we're live. Welcome to D's Practice Pod. I have a special guest here today, Joe Corcilla. This is the first time I've had someone who was once a student of mine here. Back in the Long Island Drum Center days. And he's a very accomplished player. He's also a business owner. So he has a myriad of hats that he wears. So we're going to have a nice conversation with him today. So, hello, Joe.
Hey, Andrew. How are you?
Good, good. So how long have you been playing drums, Joe?
I feel like I've been playing drums all my life. I've been, you know, tapping on stuff as far as I can remember.
Right.
I got yelled at most of my life for banging on the back of my father's.
As have we all.
I would say in any sort of formal sense, I was in school band, I think, in fifth grade. And then it's been, it's been a love since then.
Yes.
Yeah.
It does get in your blood, doesn't
yep,
it?
Yep, it does.
Okay. Okay, well, these days, what do you think gave you the bug to play? What was it that appealed to you about the drums?
Well, I think it probably had a lot to do with the instrument itself. I was always around. My older brother was a drummer, quite an accomplished drummer. So the drums were always in the house.
Right.
And they just always appealed to me, you know, just to be able to sit down and make noise as a young boy. That's, you know, what's better than that?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
The minute you can figure out that you can actually...
It's a socially acceptable way to be obnoxious.
Well,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are very few of those.
Yes, yes.
And I'm wondering how socially acceptable it is, because I'm still getting yelled at.
Well,
my wife says she can find me in the store if we get separated, because I'm banging on my legs or I'm tapping, you know. So I'm still tapping, still getting yelled at.
Well, like I say, it's part of your DNA, so
yep.
Nothing you can do about it. It's in there. Well, since you've been playing for a very long time, you must have had a few important teachers. Like, who got you started in school?
I would say that my brother was probably my earliest influence, and
right.
And then, you know, started listening to the stuff that he was taking lessons, and, you know, we'd go to a family wedding and he'd get up and play Hello Dolly with the wedding band, and
right.
You know, that probably led me to listening to Gene Krupa records and my father's big band stuff, and then it's just, you know, and it's more than drums for me. It's music.
Yes.
Music is it's a special gift.
Yes.
And
I agree.
It's, you know, I feel blessed to be able to recognize it, you know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, it's been forever. And then of course, you know, Ringo, the Beatles, you know,
yeah.
My parents had a home entertainment center.
Yes. Made of real wood.
Yeah. So
weighed 1,000 pounds.
It had the hi-fi in it and the
yes.
whole bit. So we got the Victrola, and my sister went out and bought I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Wow.
And me and my siblings sat around that Victrola and listened to it, you know, 7,000, 8,000. I could hear my father, turn that crap off. You call that music?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, ever since then, and then Ringo, I mean, you know, it was like, who didn't want to be Ringo? You know, so, and still, you know, I have this tremendous, you know, you and I have talked about this a million times.
Yes.
That, you know, Ringo is like, it still astounds me that there are people who don't get Ringo, you know. And you meet a drummer who gets him and you're like, yes, brother, you know. And it always does my heart so good to hear, you know, accomplished guys singing Ringo's praises. So,
well, you know, the thing is, the Beatles were a moment in time. They were the Beatles, and what they were as the Beatles was greater than the sum of its parts. Even though these guys are all tremendous, including, like, Paul's had tremendous success afterwards. But the stuff they did together,
You ever think about, I always thought this was an interesting thing to do. Think about taking, you know, and I know we're going to speak about Neil later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I find it interesting when you take the one guy out of, you know, of a group like the Beatles.
Right.
So let's say you took Ringo out of the Beatles and put him in the Stones and, you know, to replace Charlie Watts. What would the Rolling Stones have been? What would the Beatles have been? It was a collection of.
Right.
And, you know, what are the odds? I mean, those four guys from the same little town, you know what I mean? It's just,
yes.
It's really remarkable when you think about it.
It's splitting atoms. It really is.
And then, you know, you pull apart his stuff and you just go, man, he is just the absolute most perfect drummer for that band.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. That's the thing. Everybody, look.
As Neil was with Rush.
Yes. Well, look what they were doing with John Rutsey beforehand.
Yep.
You take that first album. Then you take the very next album. That's not even the same band.
No.
I challenge you, if it was not Getty singing.
Yep.
How would you have even known that those were the same two guys?
Absolutely.
Let alone the fact that you added a third.
Right. And that brings us to, you know, and I know every drummer that we know, anybody who might be listening to this, can really relate to, you're playing with any given band, and you're, you know, 30 minutes into a 45-minute set, you've listened to 500 potatoes from the guitar player. You listen to the bass player drop whatever. You listen to the vocalist screw up the phrasing or the lyric or whatever. Nobody says a word. Drummer,
yep.
Drop something.
That's,
and it's
that's
like
it.
The whole place turns around.
That's it.
So when you got a guy like, you know, any of these guys, you know, for me, when I think about, you know, what, I don't want to get ahead of you because I know you want to talk about Neil, but, you know, we recently went to see Jeff Beck.
Yes.
And I mean, the guy comes out, he plays two notes, and you go, ah, it's Jeff Beck. You know, and there's so many players out there, drummers. I mean, you know, you got the pocket guys, you got the, you know, you got the groove guys, you got right. The amazing technical.
The clinicians and.
Clinicians,
yeah.
What have you. But there's those guys that rise to the top enough that you go, well, that's something really unique.
Yeah.
You know, not to take anything away from the other guys, there's a place for everybody, but.
Absolutely.
There's that special thing that, you know, for Neil, I kind of discovered Neil later. So, you know, for me, you know, being able to get these other players, you know, like Ringo and whatever.
Right.
Gene Krupa, you know. You know, you go, no, don't you hear what he's doing? Don't you feel what he's doing?
Right.
But when you get those guys that are immediately recognizable and they've got that it quality. That just makes them a little different.
It's an intangible, too.
Yeah, yep.
You just can't.
Yep.
You can't.
You just can't.
You can't.
No, you can't.
Right. See? You don't even have to finish the sentence. It works. It's the way it is. It's an intangible.
There you go. I love this. It's drum chat.
Yeah.
You know, for an Italian guy, you know, Italians, we love to eat, right?
Yes.
The second favorite thing
I've heard.
Yeah. The second favorite thing is to talk about eating. So, you know, we as much as we love drumming, we love to talk about drumming, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
It's a good thing. And you know, look, I'm a fan of your podcast. I sat and listened to every word of Marko Djordjevic. And
it's been so much fun doing this.
Yep.
One of these days I'm going to be able to monetize this.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if I don't because it's so much fun to do.
Yep.
And then you listen to it, and, you know, I'm a fan of it.
Yeah.
Because
it's only
I am is just a guy talking, and then I get to have people come in here.
Yep.
And talk about my favorite thing.
Yep.
You know?
Second favorite thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all right, third. Never mind.
Maybe third.
Okay. Tell me a bit about your playing influences.
Well, you know, probably starting out with Ringo, Krupa, you know, not a young guy, so, you know, the major rock guys, Bonham, I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, I woke up this morning thinking of John Bonham. I was like, I went downstairs at 7:30 in the morning, took out my, you know, my brushes, and I'm trying to play Bonham with brushes, but you know, that's you know, that stuff. I mean, all those guys, Bill Bruford, you know, and I, you know, I have a pretty broad, you know, eclectic musical taste.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen to everything. I listen to absolutely everything, with maybe the exception of, I hate to say it, country western music doesn't really grab me too much. Although there's some stuff.
Well, the crossover stuff, things that are like blues. Like, I don't know if you've heard very much of Chris Stapleton.
No. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. I have. Yeah. No, there's. You know what? There's good music. There's bad music.
That's of everything. Yeah. I like anything done well.
But I'm not. I'm not. You know. And this is funny too, because as a musician, I think we all have different. You know, it took me a while to identify with lyrics.
Right.
Which is something I found interesting about Neil.
Yes.
You know, I never, now I'm playing in a cover band. We're playing songs that I know for 40 years.
Right.
And I might have to sing, you know, some harmonies or whatever. And I'm like, what are they saying there? And I've been listening to this song for 40 years. And I'm like, oh, is that what that is? Because I was always drawn to rhythm and melody.
Right.
I wasn't really drawn so much to lyrics, although, you know, I've kind of discovered that.
Right.
From listening to people like Liberty DeVito.
Right.
You know, he was very, very involved in the lyrics of the song, because it helped him to create.
It informed what he was doing.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. So, yeah, I mean, all over. I mean, you know, I loved Liberty's play. I loved Ian Pace. Still love Ian Pace.
Yes.
Another
lefty.
And, you know, how could you leave out Buddy?
Yeah.
And then, like we were talking earlier, I mean, you turn on YouTube, man. There's like this guy, Yoni Madar.
You have a new amazing discovery every day.
Marko Djordjevic, for me, I mean, yeah. Marko is like, guy is such a unique player. And again, you know, you get that, you know, you hear so many bands.
Right.
And the great players, and they're playing all the right parts, but you could interchange them with 1,000 other guys. But now you got that one guy who's just saying something different.
Yes.
And that's the ones that catch your ear, you know.
That's it.
And
that's what we all aspire to.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's an interesting thing too, and I've always admired that about, you know, these guys that we're talking about, because one of the struggles in being a, you know, a run of the mill drummer,
right,
is that you spend a lot of time trying to figure out who you are. Where a lot of these guys, they just are who they are.
And what I think the most amazing thing is guys that are famous session guys.
Yeah.
Who.
Hal Blaine.
You can pick out because of the way that they're playing, even though it's not their song.
Yep.
It's not their band.
Yep.
But something like Vinny Colaiuta. You watch him play with like Faith Hill, that song Cry.
Yeah. He's amazing.
You know, can I, it was him.
Can I say one thing that, you know, I don't know if I should say this. First of all, where are the cameras? There's no cameras here?
No.
I put on this suit and tie for nothing? No. But one of the things that I, you know, whenever I get into this Ringo argument with people I want to, you know, argue with about, is that I heard Vinny, no one in their right mind would argue that Vinny's from another planet. I mean,
yes.
There's a Sting recording of them playing A Day in the Life. Listen to that next to what Ringo did on A Day in the Life. And Ringo kills that song.
Yes.
He doesn't have anywhere near the, you know, the physical or technical ability that Vinny has. But he's got Ringo. He's got the Ringo.
Ringo is the part.
Yeah.
That needed to fit into that puzzle.
Yeah. So, and then play, and this is what I always say to these haters too. I'm going to put on a Beatle record, and I want you to play with it. And you make it feel like that.
You change what he's doing, make the song better.
Or even try to do what he's doing and make it feel like that.
Yeah.
You know, so for me,
I 1,000% agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
That's because you're smart.
Not dumb like people think.
And a great player.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I got to get out and play more. All right, well, tell me a little bit about your band.
Well, I was in a band called Shot Glass Nickel for, I guess, 4 or 5 years. We had a really, really good time. We were playing All this stuff, you know, when you're playing in cover bands all your life, you're always playing the most popular song from the most popular band on their most, on their biggest selling record.
Right.
And all the musicians are going,
the hits.
Did you hear the song on the B-side that nobody, let's play that one. No, we can't because nobody will know it. Well, right. This band, Shot Glass Nickel, was playing all that stuff. We were playing,
cool.
You know, Blind Faith, Humble Pie, Cream, you know, Hendrix. But a lot of, you know, a lot of kind of stuff you didn't hear. We actually did some Rush that you helped me with.
Right. Probably Limelight, right?
No, actually,
Free Will?
We were trying to do Limelight before we kind of dissolved. But no, it was, help me out, the most popular.
Oh, Tom Sawyer?
Tom Seaver. That was it. Yeah. Yeah, we were doing Tom Sawyer, and so we were doing a lot of kind of stuff that we wanted to play. So it was pretty fulfilling. I'm now back with a band that I played with more than a decade ago to do a reunion thing that we're working on now for St. Paddy's Day.
And what's the name of the band?
Pulse 5. It's a...
and what is their... What's their lane? What do they do?
Their lane is the opposite of what I talked about before. We're doing the most popular stuff from the most popular bands.
Okay.
You know, my wife and I would go hear a cover band, and all night long, like every other cover band member, you lean to your wife and you go, "We do this, we do this, we do this,
yeah,
we do this." So you know, the same kind
of
stuff.
See, that's one of the reasons why one of my... You don't see a lot of it around here, but it's going to go up on the wall eventually. I've been to a lot of Broadway shows.
Yeah.
You look at me, you're not seeing Broadway guy here, right?
No.
Okay. One of the reasons why I love going to these shows.
The pit musicians.
I can watch the show and not critique it because I have no desire to be on Broadway, but the music is amazing.
Yeah.
And I can enjoy the show because I don't have a horse in the race.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, it's when you're a player for a very long time.
Oh, I know.
Look,
you go to a wedding.
I've been
and
playing
you're going,
for 40 odd years. You're constantly breaking apart what someone else is doing and say, "Can I do that?" Like
yep.
You're measuring yourself, and I just don't do that when I'm.
Yeah, it's like a little vacation.
Right, because most of what's happening there is singing.
Yeah.
And I only sing in the shower. And not for very long, because I get told, in no uncertain terms.
You want to hold that down?
Yeah, right. Oh, let's see. Okay, well, do you, when you're doing a cover, do you try to replicate exactly what the performance is? Or you try to kind of make it your own a little bit?
You know, I've been both places, because coming up, I've known drummers who played, you know, records note for note, and I'm trying to remember who it was. I know you and I had a conversation about Mitch Mitchell, because we were doing some Hendrix thing,
yeah,
and I think you said to me, you know, Mitch Mitchell probably would never played that lick
the same way twice,
yeah. And I heard that from Ian Pace, you know. You could hear him do Highway Star on 1,000 different YouTube channels.
Right. What song were we talking about?
I think we were talking about Manic Depression.
Manic Depression was the one. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the one. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I've been kind of in both schools where I've tried to replicate every note and feel. And then, you know, with this last band, because we had a chemistry, we kind of made things our own.
Yeah.
Of course, I always felt like it was good to learn it the way it was on the record, and then,
right,
instead of, because I used to cheat a lot with that too. You and I spoke about that. Mm-hmm. I was playing counterfeit stuff because I never really never really got it, so I did it my own way. And that you're kind of fooling yourself, you know. It was like, what did I? It was a Zeppelin song. Boom, bam, ba-da-da-da-dum, bam, ba-da-dum, whatever. I was trying to learn this lick, and you know, I couldn't get it, so I just made it my own, and finally settled down and went, "Oh, okay, let me just learn it." Then, when you learn it, going out on your own is a better way to go.
Yes. Yeah. I think you're right. And I think we'll circle back to that when we get to the Neil stuff.
Yeah.
Because that guy was very unique.
Yep.
As well. Let's see. Have any gigs pending with this?
Yeah, we have a St. Patty's Day gig, and this is going to be a reunion show for a guy that that used to get us a lot of corporate work, and we did a lot of his private functions, and we got to be pretty good friends. He invited us to his home for parties and stuff. And when the band broke up, you know, it's probably been more than a decade. He called one of the members and said, "Would you guys be interested in, you know, hooking back up for a shindig I got in the city?" And we agreed to it. So we're getting ready to do that on St. Patty's Day. I don't know after that what will happen.
Where in the city is it?
It's at a place called Stitch on 37th Street.
Oh, so like midtown.
It's a big venue. Really big venue. Okay. As a matter of fact, we used to play this particular gig for him, St. Patty's Day. I think we did it for several years in a row. But at this venue, they've had, you know, Fiona Apple and, you know, some pretty big acts in this place. So it is
New York. So
it's New York. Yeah. 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 So it's good. You know, so we'll do that. And it's, you know, again, any kind of playing for me at this point, I just like to play. You know,
well, you're very good at it, so you might as well just keep it going.
You're very kind.
All right. Well, this is it's a little bit of a shorty because, well, Joe and I talked for about an hour off mic before he got in here, and he has a rehearsal to do after, and I want to be able to hit the Neil stuff. So we're going to switch tracks, and we're going to start over.